Love, Lust, and Laughter with Dr. Diana Wiley and Billy Sage, Fridays at 6 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, the host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Billy Sage, my usual co-host, is still on leave. So once again, it is my great pleasure to have Brian Brewer, the co-host, the guest co-host. Hello, Brian.
Hello, Diana. Nice to be here.
Thank you. And our guest this week is David Steinberg. He is the Leydig Trust Award. He got it for being the best erotic photographer of the year. And too bad, because this is radio, you can't see his amazing photos. But David is also a superb writer on sex and gender. And David, you've been published in Playboy, Salon, Cupido, which may not be familiar to our American listeners. Hello, David.
Yes, I'm here.
Good.
Good to be talking with you.
Yeah, it's great to have you on the show. We met up last weekend at the Quad S conference, Quad S being Scientific Society for Study of Sexuality in San Francisco. And I really like your attitude about sex. And I wanted to quote you because it's really profound, and then we can launch a discussion on your book. Well, you have several books, but perhaps the most famous is Erotic by Nature. You say, I strongly disagree with the dominant perspective of American anti-sexual moralism that sex must first and foremost be treated with suspicion and fear. And you say, well, of course, we have issues related to sex and sexual disease and coercion and unwanted pregnancy. These are very serious concerns, but... And this part I really like, David. I nevertheless see sex primarily as an opportunity and a blessing rather than a threat and a curse. Wonderful attitude, and I know it pervades your whole personal life, too.
Yeah, well, thank you. I mean, I think, you know, we all live in, it, you know, we live in a sexual culture that's changing rapidly, I think, as we speak. So
yes, as we
but,
speak.
But we certainly live in a culture that basically sees sex as a problem. I'm not saying that every individual does, but the cultural background is you've got to watch out. Sex, if you succumb to your sexual desires, if you embrace your sexual desires too much, bad things will happen. You'll get pregnant if you're a woman. You will get diseases. You will have an immoral life. You won't do anything useful. You'll end up hopeless and rotting in the gutter, you know, sort of. It's like demon rum or something. This is demon sex.
Demon sex.
And I think we're not the only culture to look at sex that way. Many do, but there are also many cultures that do not. And as that's changing, you know, in the latest wave, I think, starting with all the sexual changes that began happening in the 60s and 70s with the arrival of safe birth control and the feminist movement and the hippies and whatever, there's now also a culture of people who are much more enthusiastic about sex and see sex, you know, not just as an opportunity to have fun and feel good, but as an opportunity to express a part of ourselves which is really essential. It's creative, it's alive, it's important to our physical health, it's important to our mental health. So you know, there's now kind of a conflict, as we all know, a culture war between, I think largely between people who feel more positive about sexuality and want to find more ways, new ways, have sexual fulfillment be a real priority in their lives, and people who think that that's immoral in some ways, sinful, and it's a path that leads to bad things.
Yes, and of course I see so many people in my practice who have great fears around sexuality. And the way you've just described sex, I really believe our sexuality is at our core. And how we express our sexuality says a lot about who we are.
I think so. I think sex really gets, if people are happen to experience sex in a what I would call a deeper way, you know, beyond orgasms, beyond nerve endings going off and so on. Sex is about is about surrender. It's about loss of control. You know, how many of us feel like we must be in control of ourselves and our lives at every single moment? Otherwise, some disaster is just waiting to grab us by the throat. And when you enter into the sexual experience, you're really being called to let go of control and follow the energy where it will lead, follow your partner where he or she will lead. So I think a lot of people's trouble surrendering to sex and getting the most out of sexual experience comes from things like just being afraid of losing control. So it raises big issues. You know, the French call orgasm the little death, and I think that there is a life and death thing about sexuality.
So, well, David, if I can jump in here for
sure.
A moment. Yes, what's always struck me is that just the strange dichotomy between our cultural repression in many ways of sex and the fact that it is the fundamental driver of our survival of our species.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I find that disconnect fascinating.
And I think also is very fundamentally the expression of creative energy. You know, when people talk about Eros as creative energy, as a artist, as a creative person, I know that the way I feel when I am doing my photography, for example, when I'm taking photos or when I'm editing photos and working or editing a book and bringing something new together, that creative juice feels in my body very much like the kind of energy that I feel when I'm being sexual. Not that I walk around with a raging erection while I'm working on my books.
Oh, thank goodness.
I don't mean that. But there's this sense of aliveness in the body. My whole metabolism changes. I have to take off my shirt. You know, I think physiologically, sex and creativity are very much aligned. So to be open to a full sexual life is to be open to a full creative life, and I think that that's very important for everybody, whether they're artists or not. You know, we all to lead your life creatively, to be a parent creatively, to be a partner creatively, whatever, is important.
Isabel Allende, who is many people know about her, and she's written some wonderful, wonderful books, and she says that she before sitting down to write some more, she always makes love.
Uh-huh.
And then her creative juices are right there.
Yep.
I think you're also more relaxed.
Oh, exactly. I had a lovely time. One of the women that I, you know, we haven't gotten into this, but what I've been doing for 10 years is fine art sexual photography that is not pornographically oriented, but black and white photography trying to capture the real essence and emotion of what happens between two people, regular people, not people who do this for a living, when we're being sexual with each other. And there was one woman, I've done 160 couples, I guess, over the last 10 years. It's a whole story in itself. But one of the people that I had photographed wanted me to take some headshots of her for a talent agency. She wanted to be an actress, and she wanted And the deal that we made was that I would do that for free if she would pose for me masturbating, because I could use those photos for Cupido, the magazine I work for in Norway, an erotic magazine. So which do we do first? Well, we decided to do the masturbation first. So she's there and she's masturbating and I'm taking pictures of her. And then after she's done that and is, you know, blissful in the aftermath of that, she puts on her clothes, sits down on a stool, and I take some magnificent headshots of her for her agency.
Mm-hmm.
So I've advised portrait photographers, listen, if you want to get really great shots of your models, here's what you do. First, you have them be sexual, and then you take pictures of them about 10 minutes later.
That's great. That's great. I thought before we talk about your photography, which is just amazing, and some of your photography is in the book you edited. It was published in 1988, Erotic by Nature, and the subtitle is A Celebration of Life, of Love, and of Our Wonderful Bodies. It really is an affirmation of the importance, complexity, and subtlety of sexual feeling. And, you know, it welcomes people to explore the best of our erotic selves, which is what you're talking about, and it does it so well. I was so glad to have received your email just before the holidays because I bought a copy for Brian.
Uh-huh.
You inscribed it for him, and we are going to make that offer available to our listeners.
Right. Yeah, Erotic by Nature was the first erotic sexual book that I did. I was convinced that that people use pornography not so much because that's exactly what they're looking for, but because that's the only sexual imagery that's around. And if as a feminist and whatever, I felt, you know, critical. This is not to condemn pornography, but I think that pornography is skewed in many ways. And then I was thinking, well, if we don't like what's in pornography for one reason or another, doesn't it fall on us to come up with something better? So it was a long process, but the end product of that was this book, which is half writing and half photography. And I was convinced that there was an audience of people who wanted a different kind of sexual imagery. And the book includes everything from the sensual to the sexual, but it does include some explicit sexual imagery. And in fact, the book has sold very well. It sold about 35,000 copies over 4 different printings, which is a lot for an expensive art book. And it confirmed my notion that there is an audience out there, maybe not as large an audience as, you know, mainstream porn or something like that, but there is a significant audience of people who are hungry for a different kind of sexual imagery, which confirms us as sexual people in a different way. And since we learn so much about who do we want to be, who are we supposed to be as sexual people from the imagery we see around us, I think it's really important that we have some kind of imagery around that talks about sex as an emotional issue, as an intimacy issue, rather than as a glamour issue or as a, you know, extreme intensity issue.
Well, I'd like to say, David, I thoroughly enjoyed the book. I haven't had a chance to read everything in it, but just so our listeners can get an idea of what the book is about, it's approximately 200 pages. It's high quality, hardbound book. And there's a nice mixture of black and white photography as well as stories and poetry and some drawings as well. And I just like the whole range of expression that's embodied in the book. I think you did a great job editing it.
Well, thanks.
And and also, by the way, it was very nice to meet you last week in San Francisco, even though it was very brief.
Uh-huh. Yes,
nice to
too.
Say hello.
Yeah.
And Diana told me that you're willing, you know, the book retails, I think, for $45, but you're willing to make this available to listeners at a special rate, I understand?
Oh, sure. Yes, it's available at Amazon if you put Erotic by Nature in. You can take a look at the book and see what it is. It's a $45 book, but for people who get it directly from me, I'm glad to send people signed copies of the book for $20 plus $5 for postage. So
okay.
I don't know how we can tell people how to do that, but people can
send you a check or a money order to your mailing address. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And that's David Steinberg at PO Box 641312, San Francisco, California, 94164.
Right.
I'll repeat it: Box 641312, San Francisco, 94164.
And if people have trouble remembering that, people can email me. My email address is david@davidsteinberg.us, STEINBERG.
Right.
And if people have any questions, you know, I can email them back and explain to them how to get either that book or there's another book that I also offer sort of half price for people who get it directly from me, which is the book of transsexual photographs that I came out in my latest book 2 years ago, which is called Divas of San Francisco.
And I do want to talk about that, but perhaps after the break, I would love to explore a little bit more on Erotic by Nature.
Okay.
And Michael Castleman, who is also at our our conference, who's the writer, the author of Sexual Solutions, and writes about sexuality just as you do quite a lot. He said about your book, soft, sensual, loving, liberating. This wonderful book is truly erotic in the best non-pornographic sense of the term. Nice quote there from Michael Kasman, who, by the way, listeners, will be our guest on Love, Lust, and Laughter, May 20th.
Oh, that's great. Michael is great.
Yeah, he really is. And so he was at the conference, and we talked. And so you say that, you did these series of workshops when you were preparing to write Erotic by Nature, or to edit it, so that you could get feedback from people. And your workshops were called Pornography, Erotica, and Sexual Fantasy. And you say that you found many people, women as well as men, who were interested in quality erotica. And you said that women, you found there was a lot of interest in erotic images and stories, and especially those that might reflect women's real issues and sexual perspectives. I have been a close friend of Candida Royale now for about 20 years, and I still recommend her DVDs, videos, to certain couples who want explicit. She doesn't like pornography. She calls her movies erotica, and but it really it women are paid really good attention to in her films, and she started making them in 1984. So she was the first, I think, woman on the scene. Have you had any contact with Candida?
Yeah, I know her quite well, actually. And
yeah.
I was delighted when she started producing her films, which, you know, their goal was to combine sort of the kind of hot sexual imagery that we know from pornography, but to have it, A, be more respectful of the women, and B, be more genuine in the notion of how most people, you know, experience sex, so that it wasn't so staged and so over the top, sort of, and I think that she did a great job of accomplishing that.
Yes, and she uses real couples whenever she can, with real bodies, and they do have a plot. And most women say, "Well, you know, how come this couple's making love?" Well, because they're in a relationship. They really like each other.
Mm-hmm.
And most women need that. I had a funny girlfriend in L.A. who said, "My husband thinks I don't understand porn because I keep forwarding to the plot sections."
Yeah. You know, the thing that you said about her using people of different ages and different body types, I think that that's so important. It's one of the things that I really make a point of doing in my photography. I've photographed people from 19 to 75,
mm-hmm.
fat people as well as thin people. I'm doing a whole book, actually, of photographs of people with disabilities being sexual.
And that should be a first.
There's almost no imagery around, really sexual imagery, about people with physical disabilities. Sometimes you'll see a picture of two people in a wheelchair hugging each other or something.
Right.
But in terms of people really getting it on, you know, and the point that I'm trying to make is the truth, which is that we are all sexual beings, not
mm-hmm.
just 19-year-olds who are thin and glamorous, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Older people are sexual, disabled people are sexual, heavy people are sexual. All these people are kind of pushed to the side. Oh, you're not a sexy person. You don't count. And so we're all taught that we're not okay sexually. And there's a reason for that, because people can make a whole lot of money off of people's insecurities. If you think you're too fat, if you think that your hair is the wrong color, if you think you're too short, if you think that your breasts are not the right size or your penis is not the right size or whatever, there's a lot of people ready to make a lot of money about that, or to sell you cars and whiskey to make up for the fact that you're a loser, essentially. So they have this whole industry trying to convince us that we're not okay sexually as we are. You know, if I was 10 pounds lighter, if I was 10 pounds younger, then I would be a sexually desirable person.
Exactly.
Well, my point is the opposite. I want people to look at the pictures in, say, Erotic by Nature, or any of the couples photography that I do, and to say, oh, that's somebody like me. And look at this picture. That's hot. And that way, instead of the message being, I'm not okay, the message is, I'm really fine just the way I am.
Just the way I am, and that's so important. There are legions of women with really distorted body images, particularly women. But you also write in your foreword, your introduction to Erotic by Nature, that we have material that is produced with surprising disdain for its audience, an audience presumed to be entirely male, lonely, sexually desperate, and oblivious to the interplay of sex, intimacy, and emotional complexity. And this is material that draws its power primarily from our sexual frustrations and fears.
Yeah. Now, yeah, I think that that's still true, although this, you know, this book came out in 1988, so what's that, 30, 25 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
I think some of that has changed. I think that pornography is now so widespread
mm-hmm.
that a lot of it is produced with the awareness that the audience is not this group of pathetic, lonely men, but
mm-hmm.
everybody,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so some of that has shifted some. So in a way, that's a good thing. I think that's a good thing.
David, can you say more about how it's shifted? What do you observe in that regard?
Well, I think I don't see, there's a lot of pornography. There's still videos. There's hardly any magazines anymore because of the Internet. But there's still pictures. There's video. So I think two things have changed. One is that the people who are performing in the videos these days are, I think, genuinely... and, of course, it's hard to generalize because there's better and worse. But certainly in much pornography that is produced today, people are genuinely having a good time. They're not faking it. They're not oohing and aahing when really they're feeling nothing. Well, they may be exaggerating, but there's certainly a lot. There are enough people willing and ready to make money by having themselves filmed being sexual who really do have a good time with it. That at least some producers who are willing to, you know, wanting to show that are able to do that. And that didn't used to be true. And the other thing is that I think that everybody in their right mind knows now that everybody watches pornography pretty much, and not just liberal progressive people. In fact, the highest per capita use of pornography are in the most conservative states in the United States.
Really? That's an interesting
Absolutely. The Southeast and the Midwest are, you can ask any of the big distributors of pornography, and they know that that's where their biggest customer base is. In some sense, the more repressed people are in their real life sex lives, the more they want to get their hands on some pornography, which is not to say, and I don't want to fall into the thing of saying that if you like pornography, it means that there's something wrong with you. But anyway, it turns out to be true. I think that people who are very open about sexuality and have glorious sex lives like porn because it's part of that. And
mm-hmm.
people who don't have that like porn because they're hungry for something and that's where they go.
And porn presents enthusiastic people, people having fun, and we know how it's going to end.
Yes.
It's going to have a happy ending.
Yeah, it is going to do that. And I think one of the big things in pornography still, I mean, pornography now, women are watching pornography in great numbers, not quite as great numbers as men, but still, you know, it used to be entirely for the men. And I think one of the things that men liked most about pornography is it presented this notion that the women are just hungry for sex. They really want sex. And I the first piece I ever wrote about sexuality was about men and pornography and why is it that men are so drawn to pornography. There was a whole feminist critique of pornography, which in some ways I agreed with, but in many ways I disagreed with. I thought I was sympathetic to the men's interest in pornography, and without trying to be judgmental of them, I wanted to ask, so if 90% of guys are doing this, they can't all be jerks. So what's going on here? And one of the things that I see in pornography is it presents the fantasy, the notion that here are these women, and they just want to have a lot of sex. They are hungry, and they're hungry in the way that the men are hungry. And for men who are used to running up against women who have been taught, or, you know, this again is somewhat back in time and is changing, but for certainly a long time, women were taught that their job was to not have a lot of lusty sexual desire. Men were that way, but women were moral. Women were, their job was to tame the men and keep them from getting out of control.
Exactly, and or manipulate the men to get what they wanted, and using sex sometimes as a weapon.
Right, and withholding sex as
withholding
a weapon. So you have sexual scarcity, and then everybody's jumping all over themselves trying to get some. So.
Yeah.
In pornography, the imagery is, oh, you can get all you want, because these women, all they want to do is have sex all the time. And
right.
And for the guys who are hungry for that kind of confirmation from the women, and that, of course, it's an appealing image. And so people turn to it, masturbate to it, you know, because it works for them. Oh, if I had... I mean, I think in real life, if men had women like porn stars, they would be scared to death and wouldn't know what to do with them. But but in their minds, you know, it's like, gee, I wish my girlfriend, I wish my wife was like that. And, I mean, I wouldn't want her to be, you know, I just wish that she felt about sex like these women in the porn films.
Right. So, David, there also seems to be a rise in the amount of amateur porn that's produced these days. And it's available on the Internet.
Yes, that also. That, I mean, whether there's a rise in every kind of porn that's around. And by the way, led right now, I'm told by one guy who has produced a lot of films and wanted some advice from me, and he said the largest growing aspect of the porn marketplace right now is transsexual porn. So apparently, everybody is fascinated with transsexual women. So, but yes, amateur porn, part of it was people got tired of these glamorous, very predictable, everybody kind of having the same, oh my God, I just can't stand it. It's so intense. And everybody, you know, looking, very glamorous, very made up. And all of a sudden, people enjoyed seeing sort of what I, in a way, tried to present in Erotic by Nature, regular looking people, older people, heavier people. You know, I mean, there's this whole thing of, you know, what they call MILFs. Can't say on the radio, mothers I'd love to have sex with.
And I think you can say it. It's internet radio, but.
Oh, okay. Well, mothers I'd love to fuck. I mean, that, you know. So, and if you go online, it's fascinating to me. I mean, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of these pictures of middle-aged and even beyond middle-aged, 60, 70-year-old women, presenting the same message as the 19-year-olds present in Playboy. All I want to do is have sex with you.
Yeah.
So somebody wants these images. Now, who is it? Are these the 60 and 70-year-old men? Is it 20-year-olds? You know, because a lot of the fantasy is my friend's mother who lives next door. She's hot.
She's hot.
So who is that marketed to? You know, it seems to me that's being marketed to 20-year-olds, to 16-year-olds.
And that's the emphasis on cougars.
You name it, there somebody will produce it, given the nature of the Internet, which, you know, in some cases produces some stuff that, you know, I have to wonder about. But mm-hmm. In many cases, it's democratic. You know, it's like whatever it is, if you're interested in it, it's there. And the message of that is whatever your sexual desires are, even if they make you wonder about yourself, you're not the only person who's having these fantasies or these desires.
And that's a very important message for people to get. It's similar to, and we're going to have to take a break here, but it's similar to group work. And I've run women's sexuality groups, and that universality. Oh, I'm not alone in these problems, and I have some desires that are similar to other people. So that's very important. I think when we come back from the break, David, we'll talk more about this fastest growing segment, the transsexual porn, and your book, Divas of San Francisco. And let's talk about that actual place. That's, as I understand, it's down the block from you.
Yes, it is. It's just
so
right,
you're our friend.
Right around the corner in San Francisco.
Yeah, okay. So when we come back from the break, O'Brien, would you give the phone number for people if they want
to
call in and talk to David?
Yes, please. We want to hear from any listeners. Please call in at 1-888-874-4888. Again, 1-888-874-4888. Let us hear from you.
Come to the Progressive Radio Network each day for the brightest progressive minds in the world.
Want to listen to your favorite PRN show in your car or when you're out for a jog? You can download any show on the archives at any time. Visit the archives at progressiveradionetwork.com/archives. We can also be found in the iTunes store under Progressive Radio Network. All our archives are free, so go ahead and check them out. Thanks for listening to the Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned to stay informed.
Yeah, Jeff.
Your girlfriend gave another interview.
No. Don't play it.
Listen to this.
I have a journalism degree. That is what I studied. I understand that this cornerstone of our democracy is a free press.
Shut it off. I said not to play it.
We are in the worst reality show in history.
Why won't she shut up?
You know she's going to be president, right?
Okay, stop it. That's not funny.
I think we should just go limp. Lay back. Maybe then the Mama Grizzly won't tear off your limbs.
Cheater in the Rude, Thursdays, 8 p.m., Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Carol Brier, host of Community Currency, connecting people, ideas, important information, nurturing human renaissance, seeking to transform disintegrating empire into healthy, problem-solving, creative, evolutionary, peaceful communities. To hear us, listen every Thursdays, 5 to 6 p.m. on Progressive Radio Network.
Progressive Radio Network, your home for progressive thinkers.
We're back. Dr. Diana Wiley, host of Love, Lust, and Laughter, here today with guest co-host Brian Brewer. And our guest is David Steinberg, and we wanted to talk about it's your most recent book, or no, there's one that's now in the works, but the most recent published one is Divas of San Francisco?
Yes, that's right.
Yes. So you talked about going to your neighborhood bar, which is the Divas of San Francisco, and talk about this community, because there are a lot of guys who frequent the bar, and who are they, and who are the divas, and do they have sexual orientation issues? And we'd just love to hear this, because I don't think a lot of people know about this particular community.
Well, I think people are finding out more about transsexual people in general, so
yeah.
That's one thing. And then the sort of special community of divas is a part of that, but a somewhat atypical part of that. I think people are becoming aware more and more that there's quite a number of men and women. People estimate maybe about 3 million in the United States of people whose gender, their sense of whether they are male and female, does not conform to the bodies that they have. So people who feel usually from birth or shortly thereafter, whether they become aware that they are female, that they're a girl, or if they're older, that they're a woman, even though they were born into a male body, and vice versa. People who feel clear that they're men, but they have women's bodies. So with the growing awareness of that, with increased medical technology that makes it possible for people to alter their bodies, not just genitally, although that's part of it, but also other parts of their bodies so that their bodies can be made to conform to who they really are. It's like people kind of born into the wrong body.
And well, they feel trapped.
Well, sure. I mean, imagine, if you're now a woman, imagine that you, when you were a girl, you had all the feelings that you have right now about who you are, but when you looked down, you saw that you had a male body. Or if you're a man now, that you had, when you were a boy, you had all the feelings you had when you were 6 years old and you were a boy, and you looked down and your body was a girl's body and everybody expected you to be a girl. How would that make you feel? So those are the issues that transsexual people deal with. And I've been interested in this notion of gender for a long time now, from when I was writing my columns. And so that's one thing. Within that community, which tend to be, people just like everybody else, and people are becoming aware of transsexuals who are in middle-class jobs, professional jobs, and decide that they're going to go ahead and transition in their bodies so that their bodies line up with who they are. Most of the people in the transsexual community have issues with the media, because the media always wants to portray transsexual women in particular, because people became aware of transsexual women long before they became aware of transsexual men, that the media always presents transsexual women as being these hyper-glamorous people who are all sex workers and sex mm-hmm. maniacs and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if you're a doctor, if you're a police chief or something like that, you resent and you tell somebody that you're transsexual, then everybody's going to right away think you're a sex worker. So people resent that association a lot. And, I've written and worked with people trying to educate the general population that that's just not so. On the other hand, there is a large group of transsexual women who are interested in being glamorously beautiful, and who are sex workers, and many of them are very successful as sex workers because there is this increasing audience, market of, in the case of transsexual women, it's basically heterosexual guys who want to be sexual with transsexual women. And
sometimes known as chicks with dicks. Because they haven't had the full surgery.
Yeah, in the porn marketplace, yeah.
Porn marketplace, yeah.
And she-males and all kinds of stuff.
She-males.
And,
mm-hmm.
People have a really hard time with the terminology because it's so disrespectful, basically.
And derogatory, yeah.
So, but meanwhile, there are people who are glamorous in that way, some of whom, not all of whom by any means, but some of whom are sex workers. And anyway, Divas of San Francisco is the largest transgender nightclub and bar in the country. There are really only a handful of transgender bars left in the country.
Really?
I don't understand that exactly, but it's true. There used to be clubs in New York and that have closed. But Divas is here in San Francisco, right near downtown. It's a wonderful place, three-story building with three different bars, different shows every night, depending on what night it is, ranging from lip-sync shows to topless strip shows to karaoke to amateur talent nights. And during the days is basically a quiet, friendly place where transsexual people can come and not worry about being hassled by outsiders. And also anybody else can come there, either because they're fascinated with transsexual women and want to hang out with them sexually or not, or what I find is that a lot of people come there just because it's an open, free space where essentially you can be anybody you want to be as long as you're not being disrespectful of the people around you. People come there just because they like the feeling of freedom that's in the place, which may be totally separate from any sexual interest whatsoever. So I've been hanging out there for many years. I was working for a paper in San Francisco at one point. They asked me to do some photography of the shows there, and over years I got to know the women who work there or hang out there better and better, and started taking photos of them. At first it was just of them performing, but later it was them at home, and at some point I realized that I had some really remarkable portraits of these women, where you could see the power and the vulnerability of who they are and what they are going through.
And the courage.
And the
heavy price that they've had to pay throughout their lives.
Well, absolutely. I mean, transgender people are the most violated, the most discriminated against group of people, at least in terms of sex and gender-related issues.
As I understand it, this is from Mark Schoen, and he filmed you yesterday. We'll have to talk about that, because he has a documentary coming out on a particular transgendered person. Mark said that the suicide rate is 41%, whereas overall, it's like in the U.S., it's like 7%.
Yeah, it's 41% of people who either have attempted to commit suicide or seriously considered it. 41% of transgender people, at some point in their lives. People are so fixated on their notions of gender that people who are violating those notions are receiving, not only being dismissed by their families and friends and employers and so on, but also emotional violence and frequently severe mm-hmm. physical violence. People are murdered because somebody's having sex with them because they don't have any idea that this woman has a penis, and then they find out that she does, and then they are freaked out because they think that means that they're gay because they just had anal sex with somebody and who turns out to have a penis, and people get killed for that, and it's not seldom either. Or people get beat up on the street or get hassled on the street, like the mm-hmm. people who come to Divas. The people arrive in taxi cabs. Nobody takes a bus. So that's what it means to lead, the life of a transsexual person. And to me, these people are magnificent. We all, whether we have gender issues or not, we all have to somehow resolve how much are we going to be true to who we know ourselves to be, who we most want to be, and how much do we compromise that away in order to please the people around us who have different expectations of us, to be quote-unquote good people, to be who we're expected to be, to hold a job, whatever it might be. A lot of this comes out in terms of people's sexual orientation or sexual practices. People are sacrificing themselves right and left, trying to win the approval of the people around them and the society around them. Well, transsexual people, to me, are the most courageous people who have said, look, I struggled with this, but damn it, I'm going to be who I know I really mm-hmm. am, even if mm-hmm. it's going to mean I have to pay a huge price. And people are not naive about the price that that's going to mean. But here are these people, and there are millions of them, who have said, okay, I have to do this. I am going crazy. That's why people commit suicide or think of committing suicide. Mm-hmm. It's driving me crazy trying to be. I mean, if you're a woman, imagine yourself trying to be a man, for the first 10, 20, 30 years of your life mm-hmm. and just carrying on this charade, and how crazy that would be if all the time, everything in you is saying, this is ridiculous, I'm a woman, why can't I just be a woman? So that's the issues. And the people that I met at Divas are, this particular group of people tend to come from low-income backgrounds. They tend to not be white. They tend to not be respectable in many ways in their lives. So they don't have a lot of resources that middle-class people have. They have said, I'm going to do this, I'm just inspired by them, not because I have my own gender issues. I know that's not my issue, mm-hmm. but I think we all have issues where we know, especially around sexual stuff. You know, for me, it wasn't so much around sexual orientation. I'm primarily heterosexual.
Mm-hmm.
But when I realized how important sex was as a path in my life, I lost all my friends. You know, they thought I was too much focused on sexuality. My mother said, "David, why do you talk about sex all the time? Sex is not about everything." And I had friends who I would talk about issues that were important to me, and because they had their own sexual fears and confusions, they didn't like being around me, because then they had to think about how they weren't so happy, and they would rather just not think about this. Thank you very much. So people, I think we all pay a price when we stay true to ourselves. And then the question is, how much are we willing to do that? So to me, transsexual people are role models, you know, are the people who have said, well, here I am, I'm suffering the consequences, but I get the benefit, and the benefit is I get to be who I am. And the great majority of people say, I am so much happier than I was when I was trying to pretend to be somebody I was not.
I have a transgendered client in my practice, and she is now 70, and she knew at age 5, when she was a boy, that she was in the wrong body. And has suffered greatly through the years, and finally had the full surgery, and is much, much happier as a man, as a woman.
Yeah, I photographed a woman. She was 60 years old when I photographed her, and she had spent her whole life trying to drive this woman out of herself by being hyper macho. She was British, and she was in the army, and she went to military school, and she got married, and she had kids, and she was very authoritarian with her kids, trying to be the man.
Mm-hmm.
But she kept on being miserable, and she was in and out of drugs, and she was in and out of all kinds of stuff that miserable people do. And finally, at age 50, I guess, she found a therapist in the Bay Area here in Palo Alto who suggested to her that maybe there was a different way to deal with this than trying to get rid of the woman, which was to embrace the woman.
Mm-hmm.
And she did, and she, you know, had various surgeries and so on. So when I met her, she was 60, and she said, I'm finally happy in my life. But it took her all that time.
All that time.
To get there.
And a lot of suffering.
Yep.
Now, Mark Schoen, who's been on the program a couple of times, has Sex Smart Films, and his documentary will come out in August. Is it Finding New Hope? What is the title?
It's called Finding New Hope. New Hope is
a town in
Pennsylvania, coincidentally, where this woman, Christine McGinn, lives. And she was, as a man, she was a Navy officer, I believe, and worked for NASA and so on, and was very successful. And then transitioned and is now one of the major surgeons doing genetic reassignment surgery or gender reassignment for women. And Mark found out about her, and she's kind of the centerpiece of this film, which is not just a biography of her, but uses her story as a taking off point to talk about discrimination and violence against transgender people in general.
And what did he film yesterday when he was at your place?
Well, he was here.
I've
known Mark for a long time, and and he knew of my work with transsexual people. Basically, I did all this book of portraits of women that I've met through Divas, many of whom are stunningly, glamorously beautiful, some of which are not. The book is 59 portraits of women that I've met through Divas. Is kind of my way of trying to tell the world that there is this group of people, and they are amazing people. And if you look at these pictures for real, beyond the glamour and how beautiful they are, you'll see a lot about who these people are. So he knew about my work, and I had turned him on to some people whose stories he might be interested in, one of which was a woman, Marissa Martinez, who recently transitioned from male to female. As a guy, she was the lead songwriter and front singer of I can never remember that, not grunge, anyway, a heavy metal band called Cretan. And, you know, she had this issue, and she said, no, I'm going to be a woman. And she has done this complete transition straight through from, you know, breast augmentation and certain alterations on her face, and just recently had genital surgery as well.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark was fascinated with her story, and by the way, was accepted by her band and accepted by the heavy metal community. And
really?
Decibel Magazine, which is one of the big magazines in the community, did a fantastic portrait of her and her transition. It was great. So Mark has made her one of the significant characters in his film. So Mark did an interview with me about my photographic work with the people from Divas, but he also photographed me doing kind of a shoot with Marissa at my house.
Mm-hmm. If people want to see a little bit of a trailer of the documentary, they can go to sexsmartfilms.com, and it's a free viewing. And I know my transgender client really liked that so much that she signed up for a whole year to look at his films.
Yeah,
and
I
might add that just a couple of weeks ago we had Mark as a guest on the show, and we talked, there's more about that, and listeners can access the archive on Progressive Radio Network under Love, Lust, and Laughter.
Yeah, and if you want to see, I think you go to Sex Smart Films and you click on, there's a section called Free Videos, and then within that there's one called Finding New Hope. It's a 7-minute like trailer, basically, for the movie. It's great. It's great. And I think it's going to be a great film. He's in the middle of working on it. It's supposed to come out in August.
That's what he said. I think it's going to be a great film and sensitive and all of that. And I'm really glad that he filmed you yesterday for the interview and Marissa.
Yeah.
Now, you were telling me that there really hasn't been research in this area except for Walter Bakhtin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there's been some research into transsexuals. What there has not been is much looking into who are the guys who are attracted to transsexuals. And so in the case of transsexual women, it tends to be heterosexual guys who are attracted. In the case of transsexual men, that is, people who were born female and transitioned into being male, the people who seem to be interested, the men who seem to be interested in them are gay men.
Yes.
So Walter is doing a study of men who have sex with transsexual people, whether they be men or women. And I think it's the first... This is in the context of an HIV intervention program and so on, but as part of his study, he's asked some really thoughtful psychological questions about the guys who agree to be part of this survey. You know, who are you? What is your notion of masculinity? What is about transsexual women that's attractive to you, et cetera, et cetera? And I think he's going to come up with some really interesting information about who are these guys, and apparently there's multiplying like crazy for some reason in the culture right now. Everybody is fascinated, not just intellectually fascinated, but, you know, sexually turned on by the transsexual women. Like I say, if you poke around internet porn sites and stuff like that, there's just transgender stuff all over the place, which has all the, you know, all the usual problems of people being misrepresented and stereotyped and so
mm-hmm.
on.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently, what it says to me is that for some reason in the mainstream world, there's a lot of fascination on all different levels. I think acceptance of transsexual people is increasing really very quickly, even though, you know, horrible things are still happening to transsexual people and we have a long way to go, but the culture now compared to where it was even 10 years ago or 20
mm-hmm.
years ago is radically different, and I think it's very exciting. Mark asked me in the interview, you know, do you have fears for the transsexual community? And I say, well, I have fears for what they're going through now, but the future, I think the future is bright. I think that the culture is getting its mind around this notion of fluid gender, and I think I cannot imagine it turning around and going back the other way. I think that in 10, 20 years, things are going to start to be halfway decent for transsexual people. I mean, in the meantime, obviously people are suffering
mm-hmm.
a lot,
mm-hmm.
but But I'm excited, and some of the transsexual activists that I know are excited at really how quickly people's notions of transsexuality are changing.
Walter Bochting is a sexologist at the University of Minnesota, and as I understand it, both Eli Coleman, who is a colleague of ours and a friend, and you are on the advisory board.
Yes. Yes.
And all of this is so important because we need good, solid information, and that's one reason that I love radio so much.
Mm-hmm.
It's an intimate way to connect somehow, and it's media is just the best way to get out this sort of information. In 1994, I was in Singapore for the World Congress on Impotence. Yes, that was the name. And there was a surgeon there who was convinced by some gay guys who really wanted surgery. And in those days in Singapore in the 80s, if the police came and they saw somebody dressed in a dress with makeup and they grabbed and found a penis, they were hauled off to jail.
Mm-hmm.
And so the surgeon was convinced to begin this surgery in Singapore, a very conservative place. And he showed us slides of the whole surgery, man to woman and woman to man. Fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it really is. And I think it just makes us all think about gender in a new way. You know, how do you know you're a woman? How do I know I'm a man? Do I just assume I'm a man because I have a penis? Do I believe I'm a man because everybody around me has always told me I was a man? Or is there some way that I really know from my own experience, separate from my genitals, I'm a man?
Mm-hmm.
James Green, who's a big spokesperson for the FTM community, the female-to-male transsexual community, asks these questions in lectures that he gives. And I think it's a tricky question, you know, for people to ask themselves. How do you know? Have you chosen your gender, or
mm-hmm.
was your gender, basically rammed down your throat? You will be this way, whether you think about it or not. And of course, you accept it. And if you think, as most people do, that gender and genitals are the same, then no, I have a penis, I'm a man. I have a vagina, I'm a girl, a woman. So, you know, I find it fascinating, and it's made me think about gender in new ways. Other people, of course, find it terrifying, which is why transsexual people are subject to so much bad treatment.
David, you have been a fabulous guest. You're so articulate, and you certainly deserved the Erotic Photographer of the Year Award. And I'm pleased because we're going to see you at the Erotic Art Festival in Seattle.
Yes.
May 20th, 21st.
Mm-hmm.
And you've been there before, and you've had your photography in a well-known gallery in Seattle, right?
Yeah, I had a show of the transsexual pictures
Now, if listeners want to get a copy of that book, Divas of San Francisco, how would they do that?
Right. It's the same. I'm selling both the Divas book and mm-hmm. Erotic by Nature for $20 plus $5 shipping. So
okay.
People can send a check to me, just made out to me, at P.O. Box 641312, San Francisco 94164. Or if that's hard to remember, maybe send me a note at david@davidsteinberg.us, not .com, but .us. I can send people information on how to do it, and I'll be glad to sign it and send copies out to people. The books are also available full price from Amazon, and if anybody wants to get to see the book and see, you know, some description and some reviews of the book, they can go to Amazon and all that information is posted up there.
Terrific. Thank you again, David. And thank you, Brian, and perhaps
you can tell our listeners
about next week.
Yeah, let me chime in here and say that next week we're going to have as our guest Dr. Leanna Wolf, who's an anthropology professor in the Los Angeles area, and she's going to be talking about polyamory. And then the following week, on May 6th, we're going to have Dr. Ava Cadell, the founder and president of Loveology University, and Ava's going to talk with us about tantric sex.
So lots of good shows coming up, and we're so glad people can download the archives. So, David Steinberg, thank you. We'll look forward to seeing you in Seattle.
Yes, I look forward to it, too. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's been fun to be on your show.
Thank you so much. Bye now. Bye, everybody.